Hi, and welcome to the Coco Studio podcast. I'm your host, Mohammad Azam, and I'm joined, as always, with Stefan Eiterheim from Germany. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm great. Thanks, Azam. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And we have a special guest, Mike Daly, is on the show, the developer behind the Particle Designer and the Glib Designer. How are you doing, Mike?
Hi, Azim. I'm doing great. Hi, guys.
Hi, Mike.
Cool. So let me actually get started with this. Like, tell us, Mike, tell us something about yourself, how you got started with the iOS development, a little bit of your history.
Yeah, sure. I suppose it goes back quite a long way, like many developers, back to my first computer that I got back in 1982, which was a ZX Spectrum. And pretty much from that time on, I was completely hooked on computers, and not within a huge amount of time I was writing games or trying to learn how to write things and games on the Spectrum. There wasn't a lot around then. There were some magazines, and spent many, many hours poring over code and trying to make it work, because a lot of them had problems and bugs that were in the code in the magazines. But it just kind of developed from there. So through my teens, I was, you know, playing around with Commodore 64s, Atari STs, Amigas, and always dreamed of going into writing games or working in the game industry. After to college and things like that, it didn't really work out. I ended up going into enterprise software, as a lot of my friends were doing at the time. And that's pretty much where I stayed. So writing software for large sort of enterprise telecoms companies. And eventually ended up back in 2006 in Oracle. So huge company, you know, obviously one of the biggest software enterprise companies in the world. And obviously it was around about that kind of time as well that we had the iPhone coming out. And I'd got to a point where I wasn't doing anything like the amount of development that I wanted to. My career had changed, and I really wasn't developing as much as I'd like. And on seeing the iPhone and obviously the SDK being released and starting to see the community that was building up, it just felt like it did way back in the day with the Spectrum and the Commodore, where individual developers could just create a game on their own, do everything on their own, and then push it out. Obviously, back then it was a lot harder, but with the App Store, getting it to people was a lot easier. So that just for me really sparked that interest that this was something that one person on their own could sit down and do everything. You obviously needed some talent behind it, but you could give it a go. And that's really where my journey into iOS and to sort of writing those applications kind of began.
Cool.
Do you have any game release that you may want to mention?
So the only game I've got on the App Store at the moment, for the majority of my life, my children have really been on the receiving end of my games. So for a long time, I was a Java developer. So I did a lot of game development actually in Java. And that was really for my children. They were the only people who saw them. One of the things that happened to me after I started the 71 Squared blog with a friend of mine, John Bloomfield, was that I was contacted about writing a book. Which was like huge opportunity. Thought I'd never ever write a book, but I thought, why not? And as part of that, I created a game called Salamarax Quest. And that's basically a book you can download off of the App Store. It's free. And the whole idea of the book is it teaches you how that entire game was created. So you start from the OpenGLES template, and by the end of the book, you've written the entire game of Salamarax Quest. So at the moment, that's the only game I've actually got out on the App Store.
Cool. So, Mike, what exactly or who exactly is 71 Squared, and what do you do? Is a blog just for the book, or did you start a blog and then get a book deal, or was it the other way around?
Yeah, so 71 Squared came from myself and my best friend, John Bloomfield, who sort of moved away to Australia and lives the other side of the world now. But we decided we were both really into the iOS development, and there wasn't a huge amount of information out there back in the day. So we decided that as we were learning, we would just put whatever we could on the blog. So we created 71 Squared, which we've been asked many times where the name came from, and it's basically that we were both born in 1971. That's it. So there was two of us. So it's not a complicated name. But we did that. We started posting about things we were learning. I started some video tutorials, which were really popular. People liked them. And from that, I was contacted by Addison Wesley and asked if I could write a book. So a book sort of came off of the back of those tutorials and the blog, really, which I did. And then that sort of led to the release of what is the only game I've got on the App Store at the moment, which is called Sir Lamorak's Quest. And really the whole idea is that the book teaches you how to write the entire game of Sir Lamorak's Quest. So that's where the game came from. And that's the one that's published at the moment.
Cool. So there's a clear recommendation for anyone who wants to write a book, start a blog, write tutorials, and you'll get a book deal.
Because absolutely.
it happened to me as well. And I mean, Ray's book involvement wouldn't have been possible if he hadn't this popular book blog either. So I think if you want to write a book, start a blog first.
Absolutely. Seems to be good. Great way of getting discovered.
Definitely. Azam, do you have a question?
Yeah. So how did you, let's talk about the particle designer and the GLIP designer. How did you decide that you need to create particle designer and GLIP designer?
So particle designer, which was the first tool that we created, that really came, as do many of the tools, out of my own need to create something while I was building Sir Lamorak's Quest. So we had our particle engine written, but it was just a pain to configure it by going in and tweaking the XML directly in files. And I've always been a visual developer. I love to do things that are very visual, and I can really see what I'm playing with. I can really understand what's going on by looking at what's happening. So by this time, another good friend of mine, Tom Bradley, was also developing on iOS, and he was sort of taking the engine work that I was doing for Sir Lamorak's Quest, and he was using it for his own needs and enhancing it for his own game engine. And we both decided that it would be great to come up with an editor that allowed us to just do this particle design in real time. So that's when we both sat down, started to design Particle Designer, and really that's where it was born, to give us the ability to fiddle with all of these many, many different parameters and see immediately what's going on, so that you could edit something really, really quickly and not have to keep recompiling your game and rerunning your game and all the sort of the amount of work that is required normally to get that into your pipeline.
So specifically for Particle Designer, I was always wondering how was it, because CocoS2D's particle engine is actually quite similar. Is there some technical reason for that, or did CocoS2D essentially copy your FX engine, or was it the other way around, or why is there a similarity between those engines?
So it was about this time that I actually discovered CocoS2D. I hadn't really sort of seen it or been aware of it at this point. So I'd actually written my own particle engine, which it kind of worked, but I was suffering with some performance problems. I wasn't using point sprites at that time, and this was sort of back in the day of the iPhone 3G, not even the 3GS. So, you could quite easily just flood the machine and really cause performance problems. So, in looking around, sort of try and get some guidance, that's when I came across CocoS and actually had a look at their particle system, which was quite similar in terms to what I'd started to do, but obviously it was further along the road. Into it used the point sprites. The way that it was actually using the vertex arrays was something that I wasn't doing. I was sort of doing still individual calls at that point. And so it just made a lot of sense to look at the structure and how that worked. And that's what went into my engine, and which then meant that in writing Particle Designer, it was very, very simple to use Particle Designer to not only generate output that worked in my own particle engine, but also that worked in CocoS's engine. So there was definitely some sharing going on. So for example, there's a lot of, or there's some code inside the emitter that I did, which handled things like the radial emitter outputs and some extra parameters and some different math in there to do some different effects. So I had that in my emitter and it was supported in Particle Designer. And Rick actually obviously saw that and then loaded and put that into CocoS. So we've kind of shared. I took some stuff from the CocoS engine and the CocoS engine took some stuff from what I was doing, so that Particle Designer could actually be used for both engines in entirety. There wasn't any missing functionality.
That's cool. And speaking of sharing, that perfectly fits the next question, because There is a sharing feature in Particle Designer where you can upload the finished particles, and other people can download them and try them out on their system. So we were wondering how this came to be and why there isn't a sharing feature in Glyph Designer.
Right. Yeah. So when we did Particle Designer, one of the things that we became completely addicted to was just playing. I mean, you could just hit the randomize button and then tweak a few little of the sliders and just get some really cool effects, some things that you would never have necessarily thought of, but you stumble across them and think, that's really cool looking. I want to be able to use that. So after we'd sort of done the original design and actually got everything coded up, it was actually Tom's idea, who he said, well, this would be really great if we can share this stuff, if we can actually show programmers what is possible, because certainly from my point of view, I'm not a designer, I'm not really great at graphics by any stretch. So it's good, I love seeing somebody else's ideas to sort of give me ideas and to see what's possible. So that's when we decided that it would be a great idea to say, well, let's share it. Let's if people want to, allow them to submit their particle emitter designs and let other programmers take them, tweak them, and reuse them. And that's really where the library came from. For Glyph Designer, there were, and I think you mentioned this actually on one of your previous podcasts that I was listening to, there are some issues around copyright. So a lot of the fonts that people use are fonts that they've purchased themselves, and therefore they're not really licensed to sort of just share it for everybody else to use. So there are licensing issues there. But we've overcome those now. So what I can say, sort of a bit of an exclusive, is that in the next release of Glyph Designer, we are actually introducing the sharing of styles. So you won't actually have the physical font that the person used, but the style, the coloring, the shadow, everything else about that font will be visible in a library and will be something that you can then click on, apply to your own font, and start to make use of. So while it wasn't there for release one, we've actually come up with some ideas, and we're going to actually make it available in the next release.
Great.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I just have like for the listeners, we usually try to get the people on the show where we have actually used their product, and Mike Daly's products, I have actually used Glyph Designer, and I really love it because it allows you so simple that you can create your own fonts. I mean, color your own fonts and give them like style and gradients with just a matter of seconds, I guess. And you can create those beautiful effects. And to prove that, all of my games, all of the four games in the App Store, they use Glyph Designer. So
That's excellent. That's really good to hear.
Yeah, that's a perfect tool for me because I mean, I can't really draw or I cannot really draw any fonts or anything because I'm a developer, not a designer. But this tool, Glyph Designer, allows you to very easily draw your fonts and to change the gradients. And it's extremely fast that you can see the live results on the left-hand side of the pane. And then you can export it to FNT and PNG file and easily use it in your app. This is an awesome tool.
I appreciate the feedback. And one of the things that we work very, very hard on with Particle Designer and even more so with Glyph Designer was that I'm a really big believer in that developer tools should be really easy to use. They should look good. They should be enjoyable to use. I've ended up using so many different tools, even in the enterprise space, that are just horrible. They look really nasty, and you know, they're just sort of been made by developers for developers with no real thought for usability, for looking nice, for performance, and I hate that. So we work really hard to try and make sure that things like Glyph Designer are good to look at, they're easy and intuitive to use, and that there's good performance, that you know, we're making as much use of the resources available to just keep it fast, let you see exactly what's going on in real time. So that is definitely something that we try very hard to do.
Cool. I have one question from the Twitter Nomad Games, and he's asking that what improvement are scheduled for Particle Designer, and also I guess the Glyph Designer. He's also praising that love Particle Designer and use it daily. So that's one more.
That's excellent. So it's at the moment it's obviously a huge list of things on our roadmap that we want to do. I mean, this is for Tom and I, this is still it's still a hobby. We've got a day job. You know, this isn't what we do full time. So we're always sort of fighting with priorities and what should we do first, and there are just so many things that obviously pull our time, let alone families and everything else. But there are some very distinct plans for both of the products. At the moment, apart from sort of tweaking any bug fixes that may come up for Particle Designer, we're actually prototyping Particle Designer 2.0 at the moment. Now, 2.0 is going to be from the ground up rewrite of Particle Designer. We want to change the look and feel. If people go to the 71 Squared blog, we've actually got a post on there where we're sort of showcasing some of the controls that we're starting to design. So we're actually designing our own custom controls for controlling the values and variances, for example, rather than just using boring sliders. We're trying to come up with some different control ideas that will make that a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun to use, hopefully. So for us, it's really about focusing on Particle Designer 2.0 and getting in obviously all that's there today, but redoing the GUI, you know, really bringing it up to the level of GUI that we've got in Glyph Designer, and trying to add new features and functions. I mean, we're prototyping at the moment, for example, trying to allow people to actually add their own algorithms into the particle emitter. So by using things like Lua, they can actually say, well, I want to have my particles do something slightly different, and the math inside there at the moment doesn't support that. So we're looking at ways of how we could maybe expose that through Particle Designer. So there's a bunch of things on the roadmap for that. So we're working hard to try and get some of the prototyping finished so we can and just sort of show people where we're going and what we want to do. There's a lot of work to be done, I think.
That's very interesting about the Lua part. And I was wondering, is this going to be available for Cocos2D as well?
That would be our hope, yeah. So, I mean, certainly, from our point of view, the biggest purchasers that we have of Particle Designer are the Cocos2D community. That is by far the largest number of people who download the app are downloading it from Cocos as compared to people, say, using my engine from the book and actually using it in there, which obviously it does support. So if we do anything in that way, what we would look to do is actually put back into the Cocos2D project any sort of extensions that are needed to allow that particle engine to support that as well. We're in sort of fairly early days yet because obviously performance and stuff like that is a consideration. But if we can do that, if we can open up the guts of the engine to let people make some tweaks to it in a way that can be configured through an editor, we just think that would be quite cool. And it'd certainly be something that we push back into Cocos2D so that everybody can make use of that.
Cool. I think I missed a part of the question from Nomad Games. I think the part of his question is also, can we expect to see interactive particles?
So this again is something that we've been asked a number of times about. And to be honest, when we first did this, we were really sort of just hitting performance problems. Because when you start having particles that are interacting with each other, and therefore we've got to handle collision detection, when you start ramping up the number of particles, that can become a bit of a problem. So we are looking at how we can make use of some of the physics engines that are out there to actually handle the collision part, and just to really experiment to see what the kind of performance hit is. Because if there is some kind of ceiling you can hit, but below that you can actually have particles that are interacting with each other in a realistic way, then I think that's something worth adding for sparks, having sparks bouncing off of floors and walls and each other. I think that would look really cool. So again, this is all stuff that we're sort of prototyping in at the moment to see, is it doable? Is it something that's going to be stable enough and performant enough to actually put into the product?
Great. So what's the next question here? Okay, Mike, you also mentioned that you got a lot of sales from the Cocos community, but you also work full-time. Begs the question, do you make enough money from Glyph Designer and Particle Designer to possibly do this full-time, or is it just not enough and it's actually necessary for you to have a full-time job?
Yeah, great question. So unfortunately, it isn't enough for me to sort of look at going to it full time. Everything, obviously, the people involved in Particle Designer and Glyph Designer are myself and Tom. And between the two of us, and even though the sales are good, there just isn't enough for sort of either of us to say, that's it, I'm going to chuck in the day job and I'm going to set up and do this stuff. So certainly at the moment, the income is something that sort of keeps us focused and allows us to I suppose it allows us to justify spending so much time away from our family and sitting in front of the computer. I can go to my wife and I can say, "But look, you know, it's for all of us." So I don't know how many other developers have the same thoughts and things they have to deal with. So yeah, unfortunately, at the moment, no, not something that would allow us to go full time on this.
Would you go full time if the income was enough?
Yeah, I think I would actually. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly I've been really surprised by just how popular Particle Designer and recently Glyph Designer has been. We thought there would be some kind of need. These were both tools developed out of a need that we had. That then we thought, well, this would be great to share this. You know, but again, we didn't want to just push out, oh, look, I've hacked something together, and therefore everybody else play with it. It was a case of, if we are going to put it out there, we want to make sure it's out there as a proper product and is, you know, stable and is as bug free as we can make it. And it's been good fun. I've really enjoyed doing the tools. They kind of say, in a gold rush, you have two types of people. You have the people who go panning for gold, and you have the people who sell the shovel. And certainly with iOS, I haven't got the most incredible ideas to come up with an Angry Birds or a Cut the Rope or whatever it may be. So rather than go panning for gold, I'm deciding to sell the tools. and I'm enjoying it. Tom and I are really enjoying putting the tools out there. And so, I think if the opportunity came about, that I think would be certainly something very interesting to pursue.
I like the saying, by the way, I don't know the exact words, but essentially it boils down to, in the gold rush, the only people who got rich are those selling shovels. So essentially it's selling shovels to gold diggers. That's the phrase, I think. And I heard this many times over, and totally makes sense. So if you don't have a, you know, really unique idea or a good position, that you have superb graphics and coding and sound for your app to make it really stand out from the crowd, it might even make more sense to start selling to the developers instead of going to the App Store and hoping for the best.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And to be honest, some of the one of the reasons I enjoy writing games, or to be honest, one of the reasons why I just enjoy writing software, is I love solving problems. You know, I love coming up with unique or different ways of overcoming an issue or a particular problem that I face. And writing tools, and I would never have really sort of thought about this until I started doing more of Particle Designer and Glyph Designer. But there are some really interesting problems you come across. There are some really interesting things and issues that you need to solve. So as a developer, it's tweaked my interest. It's something that isn't just that, oh my gosh, I've got to go and write a tool. It's actually like, yeah, and we've come across some unique problems to solve, and we've had to work on how to overcome them. So as a developer, that still tweaked my interest enough, which is why I suppose we've become, you know, quite intrigued by developing tools for developers and seeing what developers want the tools to do, because there's always some great recommendations from people out there of what they'd like it to do next.
So, Mike, what do you? What is your day job?
So, my day job has changed recently. I was, as I said earlier, working for Oracle, and we were really sort of working on large enterprise telecoms systems for customers, and decided that the big corporate companies just weren't for me. You know, I just wasn't having the sort of the excitement and the fun that I really wanted to have. So I recently moved a month ago, and I started with a much, much smaller company called Vindicia, small compared to Oracle, obviously, which is 110,000 people or something. And this is a completely different domain. It doesn't deal with telco anymore. It really is working with providing software as a service billing to online merchants, so game companies, people like that. A lot of the customers of Vindicia are game companies, which for me and my love of games and writing games is absolutely fantastic. It just fits so nicely with my interests. But it's for my day job. So I may not be writing games, but certainly at the moment I'm working very closely in that industry with some very innovative companies, be they web-based games or huge multiplayer RPG games. So my role has become much more back into the code, back into you know, dealing with customers face to face, which I really enjoy. So it's changed over the last month, to be honest.
Cool. And perhaps I think I should tell the listeners that Stefan Eiterheim just dropped off the call actually a couple of minutes ago, and we'll have him back as soon as he's online. So Mike, do you also like playing games? I mean, do you play a lot of games like PlayStation 3 or PC games like World of Warcraft and all that?
So I did play an awful lot of games. And so World of Warcraft, you mentioned, I've lost count of how many days of my life I have lost to playing World of Warcraft and trying to level up the warrior, the tank that I was. I've played all sorts of those games. Love playing any kind of game, really. Not particularly into one particular genre. First person, obviously, has been very big. I enjoyed playing all of those games way back in the day when the original Duke Nukem came out, nice. Which was always good fun. Really enjoyed that. So looking forward to Duke Nukem Forever, which is going to be hopefully soon. That should be good. Xbox 360 is what's in my house that my kids play. So that's really probably where I do most of my gaming now. If it's sort of the AAA games, otherwise I just download as much as I can on my iPad or my iPhone. Just love seeing that some of the unique games that are out there. I mean, things like Casey's Contraptions, which was recently released, is just fantastic. That physics-based game, the way that it works is just amazing. And anything like that I can get my hands on, I certainly try to.
Cool. Now, you talked about Duke Nukem 3D. I remember when I got that game in 11 disc, 3.5-inch disc, and I was praying that, okay, I'm running this pk unzip command, and hopefully it will, you know, it will work till the 11 disc, and it did, actually. And that was, like, one of the best games I played. Like, I don't know when it was released, like 13, 14 years ago, and it's been a long wait for Duke Nukem Forever.
It's been a huge wait for Duke Nukem Forever, and I agree. I think when I first played Duke Nukem 3D, I was just completely blown away by what I was seeing and what I was doing. I mean, you look at the technology now, you look at that old build engine now, and it does seem very, very dated. But in its day, that really was kind of like the grandfather of where we are now with the FPS game. And it's amazing to see how far we've come in what is quite a short period of time, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think it was going to be released this year, maybe in February, and then it got again delayed or something. And I don't know if they have any date, like a release date for Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be something like May 16th, and then they pushed it back maybe 1 or 2 months. So I think it's only 1 or 2 months the slip. So I think it's still going to be in the summer, which would be great.
Oh, cool. So Mike, are you currently working on any project?
So there's a number of things sort of on the go. Obviously we've got the Particle Designer 2.0 rebuild that we're sort of working on designing, but we're also it's just, again, number of hours in the day, but we've got little things sort of bubbling around in the background that we're always fiddling around and playing with. So Tom, for example, he released I just saw that is that Stefan come back on?
Oh, yeah, let me try to add him, actually, because he's still showing as away.
Okay, maybe he wasn't back then. No, it looks like he's still off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you were talking about what you're working right now.
Yes, yeah, so there is a number of projects that we've got on the go. Particle Designer 2.0 is obviously a key one at the moment, looking at getting that rebuilt. But we've got a number of little sort of projects bubbling around that we play with when we get some time. Or I don't know about yourself or other developers that are listening, but sometimes you can get bogged down in sort of working on the same app day after day after day. And so what we've tried to do is have these little projects that if we really get bogged down, we can just jump to one of our fun projects and have a go at those. So, for example, we're sort of looking at other editors that could be useful, maybe in the area of sound, for example, Tom over Christmas wrote a game, and he basically created, again, it was sort of built on top of the engine that I'd created, and then he extended it to have actions and scheduling and that kind of thing. And he built quite a sophisticated editor for it. So literally everything about the entire game design was developed through this desktop editor. It spat out XML, and the XML then just drove the entire game. So there's a whole bunch of little things like that that we're mucking around with to see, well, you know, what could we do and what could we achieve with those tools? So nothing specific, but certainly lots of little things that we're playing with that may come to fruition and maybe something we can build going forward.
Cool. Okay, I think that Stefan Utterheim is online. Let me try to add him now. And we'll ask him what happened.
Yeah.
Hi. Sorry for the drop off.
What happened, Stefan? You were gone like for 12, 15 minutes.
Yeah, the server crashed. It forgot which disk to boot from. And somehow there's a disk problem. The boot disk is a bit sketchy. And sometimes it just crashes and then forgets it has this disk. And so I had to reset everything and hope for the best. And this happens like every 3 months or so.
And I guess today was a day.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay.
That's one of those problems I hate, because as a programmer, I love solving problems, but I hate solving problems that have no apparent cause or final fix, you know?
Especially when it's a hardware problem.
Exactly. There's so much I can suspect. I mean, I'm suspecting the power adapter. It may not be having enough watts for the amount of peripherals, accessories on the computer, but, well, hard to figure out if you don't can't just test this stuff out. Okay.
Yeah, we were just talking about the background or the job, the day job of Mike Daly, and we talked about the current projects that he's working on, and I was just trying to ask him what is his thoughts on Zynga acquiring Cocos 2D main contributors.
So yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, really. Didn't see that one coming. Obviously, I don't know Rick particularly well, although I have communicated with him quite a bit around Particle Designer and Glyph Designer. He's been kind enough to test those apps before they were released and to make sure that they're working correctly with Cocos 2D. Which has been great, you know, always really appreciated that input. So that was a real surprise. And I suppose it's a bit of an unknown as to what's going to happen. I've obviously been trying to keep up to date with the speculation about the tools and that they may be writing, and are they going to become available? And I think that'd be fascinating if they ever did do that. I think that would really push the Cocos community forward and maybe enable people to come up with some even more intuitive games than what we're already seeing, which are already pretty clever. My personal feeling is that maybe they're going to protect that investment. If it was my business and I was bringing on people like Rick with their experience and knowledge of Cocos, I'd want to make sure that I was using them to my own advantage, that I was having just that little bit of edge over everybody else to make sure that I could do something that was just that bit more complex, but do it more quickly because of the tools that I've got, or maybe what's being added to the framework itself. So I think Cocos 2D's got such a massive community that it's going to continue no matter what, unless something really drastic happens. So I think Cocos itself is going to continue long into the future. But I think it's going to be interesting just to see what happens. You know, what are Zynga going to do? What are they going to use Rick and his experience and background for? So I think that's going to be quite interesting times going forward.
Mike, do you want to say anything to your audience, actually about your tutorials and screencasts that you are doing? You want to update the listeners with the process, the whole thing, what's going on?
I appreciate that. Thank you. It's there's obviously an awful lot going on, and a lot of time over the last year, probably, if not a little bit longer, has been spent sort of trying to get the book finished and obviously working on Particle and Glyph Designer, which take quite a bit of time to write and to perfect. But the tutorials on 71 Squared, which really is where all of this started, without those tutorials sort of being accepted so well and people embracing them, I certainly don't think any of these things would have happened. But those tutorials aren't dead. They are going to continue. I'm planning at the moment a series of tutorials that are really sort of start you from Xcode 4 and the OpenGLES template all the way through to creating your own basic 3D game and engine. So without using anybody else's engine, it'll just go through the basics of how to start rendering in 3D and all of that kind of stuff, maybe using Core Motion to handle the gyro. And it's hopefully an interesting step up from the 2D stuff that's in the tutorials already. So that's coming. Unfortunately, it is a best effort. As we were saying earlier, and I'm sure other developers out there are going to be suffering the same, there's only so many hours in the day. And I'd love to generate so much more content than I am at the moment. And the majority of people who comment and post are really appreciative of what we're able to push out. Unfortunately, there's always those who aren't that appreciative, and I've had some pretty unhappy people over the last few months comment on the lack of tutorials coming out of 71 Squared, but we do our best. They're going to continue as often as we possibly can, so watch this space, and hopefully we'll get some stuff out that'll keep people interested going forward.
Cool. I do have one question that I should have asked a bit earlier, but what can you tell us about the sales of your book, and are you happy with the sales, how it was received, how well it was received?
Yeah, it's that was a whole, that's a really interesting exploration for me, I suppose. I've never done a book before, didn't have any expectations. To be honest, didn't really do a great deal of research beforehand about what to even expect. I was so excited about the opportunity, I just sort of went with it. So I think, yeah, I think I am happy with the book. I've done more research since the book came out. And I think given what I've seen other technical writers saying, especially in this sort of space, I'm pretty comfortable with what it's done. It's not as much as you'd like, but then it's not really a Harry Potter or anything like that. So it's going to have a reduced audience, if you like. But certainly, according to Amazon and things like that, it's stayed fairly high up the list of books. And so from that point of view, I'm really quite pleased with it. Always would have loved it to have done more or be doing more. But certainly at the moment, given what I've read, I think it's pretty much where it should be or where it can be, given the style and subject that it's covering.
All right. Just a bit of research. I mean, before I started my book, I somehow read or somewhere read that practically no technical book ever sells more than 10,000 copies. I think the number was even a bit lower, but that was my mark, that if you sell a 5-digit number of your book, you're practically in technical book writing heaven. So what you can expect is usually a couple hundred copies, and if your book is successful, it means it has a 4-digit sales number. That's what you can expect, and I'm quite happy to say that my book passed that 4-digit mark, but I'm probably not at liberty to say exact numbers. But I'm a bit disappointed that we won't be seeing Learning iOS Game Programming, the movie, so I'd love to see that.
I know. Well, there were originally plans to follow up or have alongside the book an entire set of tutorials that sort of says, okay, well, you've got the book, now watch the movie and watch the tutorials. And again, I think I was a bit overexcited and a bit overconfident in just how much I could achieve on that one. And that ended up not being possible, just purely down to time. The book took so much longer than I thought it would and was so much more work. And I learned an awful lot. Trying to write the entire game at the same time as writing the entire book was probably my failure there, in that I would sort of write some code. I would then cover off a load of stuff in a book, maybe write one or two chapters of the book, which was covering that code. I would then start writing more code and realize that I'd actually gone down a dead end. And then I needed to rewind, unpick a lot of code that I'd already done, which then meant I was going back and I was unpicking stuff in the book. So I learned a lot about the process I really should have followed, and it just meant that it ate more time than I was expecting. So, yeah, really wanted to do some tutorials because that's where it all came from, but just ran out of time in the end, which is a real shame.
Yeah, that's a good experience, one that I can share because I had a hunch before I started my book that it might be a bad idea to use one game and write 15 chapters about it. So I decided that actually I wanted to have several games in the book, and I wanted to have several games complete, basically one semi-complete game per chapter. That didn't turn out so well, but in the end, it really helped to have one or two chapters maybe following the same project, and then I can start another project and I don't have to, consider going towards dead ends and having to rewrite all the previous chapters. That's a massive amount of rework. So how long did you work on the book whole time?
I started, let me think. So I actually started the first sort of the first few words of the very first part of the book. I started on, I think it was the 7th of July, 2000, and what would that be? Not last year, but the year before. So 2009. And everything was finished and in for sort of all the editing and the final reviews at the end of March 2010. That's how long, and I probably started the game because I was already working on the game anyway from maybe April 2009. So I was a few sort of months ahead or a few weeks ahead in terms of the game design itself without any of the coding. So longer than I thought it would, certainly. But in the end, it's great. It's always hard to read some of the reviews. I get great reviews, and it doesn't matter how many great reviews you had, you get one that's a bit negative, and that always hurts. That was an experience that I had to learn and to deal with. But in general, I mean, again, I haven't got numbers and that I could share, but I think certainly around the beginning of this month, on Amazon, it was ranked around about 9,000, I think, in the ranking system out of, I think, 8 million books. So that's enough to sort of keep me happy at the moment anyway.
Great, great. It's funny. Yesterday I did another podcast in German for with a the journalist, someone who writes reviews for an online gaming magazine in Germany, and he also mentioned the bad criticism or the criticism in general. It hurts, and I think we all do this, have this experience, being book writer or blog writer or a tutorial writer or review writer. It's kind of sad, but there can be some jerk coming along writing a stupid comment that pisses you off, and it hurts, even though you don't know this person, and you really shouldn't care, but you do. It's but on the other hand, it's a good sign because it shows that you care about your work. But
Yeah,
it's
no, I agree. It's you have to get a thick skin, and unfortunately, I've not got that thicker skin yet. So I still wince if any do get, and it's interesting. The American market is far more praising of the book than the UK market is. When I look at the reviews, the ones in the UK are extremely harsh compared to all of the reviews, which are far more in the US market, which I just found really interesting. So, why that is, I have no idea. But yeah, it is something you have to get used to.
Maybe a cultural thing.
Yeah, quite
Azam,
possibly.
okay. Azam, do you have another question for Mike?
I think we have kind of reached the end of the podcast. If you guys have to add anything or not, then we can pretty much. I'd just like to thank Mike Daly for being on the show, and we will include the particle designer and the glyph designer on the show notes so people can easily download it. Also, link to the book and the tutorials and screencasts, everything that Mike Daly has actually done for the Coco Studio community. I would also like to thank my co-host, Stefan Atherheim from Germany, who was cut off for a while, and he has explained. So I think that's
I
pretty
have an
much.
excuse, yeah.
Yes, it was that third month. So that's pretty much it, and I hope the listeners will like this podcast. Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks, Stefan.
Thank you. Thank you very
Yeah.
much.
Thank you, Azam. Thank you, Mike. And just a final word, the glyph designer, in my book, I'll add the description for the glyph designer to my book because I previously used Hero and mentioned it shortly because I didn't want to include it in my book because it was so buggy and even though it's free, it's hardly usable. But I'll make sure I update the Glyph Designer text and describe it a little and add this to my book. That's
great.
Next to do on my list.
Much appreciated. So, no, appreciate that, Stefan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
With that, I think we'll end the podcast. So thanks again for Mike Daly and Stefan Eiterheim. And have a good night or good day, whatever your time zone is. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Have a good post-podcast time.
That's right. Thank you. Bye-bye.